This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
He rocks in the treetop all the day long, popping and a popping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jay Bird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rockin' Robin, tweet, rockin' Robin. Rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock up tonight.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Little Bobby Day, Rockin' Robin, to wake you up this morning. Thank you very much for joining us here on Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy. This is Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. And it's Monday, November 24th, 3 days before Thanksgiving. Wow. Thank you for being here. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Sam Kasman of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's all about Obamacare and the federal exchange subsidies. There's going to be a court test of the federal exchange subsidies and whether or not they can be given to states that have opted out of taking funding for Obamacare. It's an issue that could bring Obamacare to its knees. So stay tuned for it. Also, hot off the wire, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel stepping down. He's actually being pushed, apparently. We will discuss that. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, the top 10 cities with the lowest income, people with the lowest average income. Kind of interesting. So stick around for that. Freedom Works, we come to you 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network to talk about the concept of libertarian thinking, libertarian ideas, individual freedom. The more individual freedom that you have, the better off everybody is going to be. Individual liberty is what our Declaration of Independence was all about, getting away from the constraints of a government that was forcing people away from being free. And so that's why we do this, and we're glad you're with us. If you want to call us, it's 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. You can also find out more about the show and access previous programs by going to our website at thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. Well, thank you very much again for being with us. And in just a few minutes, Sam Kasman is going to be joining us. And we're going to be talking about how the Health and Human Services Agency has flip-flopped on these subsidies. And it involves Jonathan Gruber. You've heard that name now. The guy has apparently stepped all over his tongue and gotten himself and the whole concept of Obamacare in deep trouble. He's been tape telling people that they had to play a charade on you so that you would accept Obamacare. And he didn't think much of the American public in general in terms of their intelligence. Basically, he said they're kind of stupid. So we got to sort of force feed it to them. They won't understand otherwise. It's like, we know that you got to take your castor oil, but you're too stupid to realize it, so we're going to give you the castor oil. But in order to fool you, we're going to tell you that it tastes like Pepsi. So that's kind of what it's all about. We're going to be talking with Sam in a few minutes about all of that. In the meantime, hot off the wires, Chuck Hagel. And people, I mean, the invisible man, as far as I'm concerned, in the Defense Department, the Defense Secretary, is out. He's been pushed. Although it says here in the New York Times that he's stepping down under pressure. Well, yeah, he is. When they say you're stepping down, like when you're kicked out of the office and the door is locked, is that like you've decided to leave, or is it like they've decided you're leaving? That's kind of what happened to Chuck Hagel. And he's the first cabinet-level casualty since the elections earlier this month. And the collapse of Obama's Democratic majority in the Senate. And their national security team has not looked very strong recently, right? with the Ebola thing and with ISIS. Where's Hagel been, right? He's sort of been hiding under his desk, maybe. And so Obama is going to announce his resignation in a Rose Garden appearance. It's funny. You know, when they do these, I'm now announcing the hiring of somebody, that person stands right next to you. However, when you're no longer going to be there, that person isn't there when he makes this announcement. They should have a cardboard cutout of Chuck Hagel right next to him, next to Obama, you know? And then Obama sweeps his hand over and the cardboard cutout falls over. I think that would be very appropriate. Anyway, the officials describe Obama's decision to remove Hagel as a recognition that the threat from Islam and the Islamic State would require a different kind of skill than those that Mr. Hagel was brought on to employ. Well, what was the skill that he had? If he didn't have the skill to be the Secretary of Defense, what exactly was this, the different kind of skill? Didn't he have that? I think the skill is that you're able to talk defense and work in defense. Apparently, he didn't have that skill. What skill did he have, I'm wondering? He was 68 years old. He was, by the way, a Republican. He was one of the few. No, of course, you know, he should have figured that there would be a rug under him all the time if he was a Republican in the Obama administration. He had military experience. He had a skepticism, apparently, about the Iraq War. He originally had come in to manage the Afghanistan combat withdrawal and the shrinking Pentagon budget. So it'll be interesting to see who is Obama going to be bringing in to replace Hagel. Now, Hagel's team said in recent weeks that he wanted to serve out his full 4 years. Well, yeah, you wanted to. His removal appears to be an effort by the White House to show that it is sensitive to critics who have been pointing to stumbles in the government's early response to both Ebola, the Ebola crisis, and the threat posed by the Islamic State in the Mideast. Then you got the border crisis, which is not directly affecting defense, but in a way it is. And it all kind of gears in towards national security. So kind of a quick announcement this morning. They're doing it very quickly. It'll be interesting to hear what Hagel has to say when he gets an opportunity to be ungagged. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Sam Kasman is going to join us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about another, let's say, interesting miscue, Obamacare. So don't go away.
And it shows them pearly white, just a jackknife.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tan Talk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
The Nutrition Center Hour is brought to you by Total Nutrition Center of Clearwater. Total Nutrition Center is a full-line supplement store located in the Bayside Bridge Shopping Plaza at the intersection of McMullen Booth Road and State Road 590, which is just one block north of Ruth Eckerd Hall. We've been servicing the Clearwater area with nutritional products and advice for almost two decades now. Call us with any questions at 727-724-1111. That's 727-724-1111. The website is totalnutritionusa.com.
Tune in to the book club with John Austin.
Well, I actually taught public speaking, as you probably know, in college for 7-8 years.
You could ask the questions and answer them yourself. I could just sit here.
You ask terrific questions, you listen, and it's just a joy to work with you.
Well, I love
you. We should go on the road, you know?
Right, well, I'd be happy to. And
you may not be able to go on the road, but don't worry. We bring the book club to you every Tuesday at noon right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
We celebrate veterans. All we can ever do for our heroes is remember them, remember what they did.
WVET Online Radio, Voice for Vets, is now on WTAN 1340 AM every Saturday morning from 11 to 12 with talk, commentary, music, community reports, special features, and much more. Don't forget, every Saturday from 11 to 12, Voice for Veterans on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And I'm proud to be an American.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for joining us. And we're delighted to have Sam Katzman joining us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Everybody's been hearing about this guy, Jonathan Gruber, and all of these different videotapes coming up, and his talking about how they had to kind of hoodwink the American public to get Obamacare passed. In the meantime, there's another issue coming that's occurring, and that is subsidizing people that get into Obamacare. There are states that have accepted with their own websites in their states, and then there are those states, which are most of them, I think, about 36 of them, that have decided no. You go to the Obamacare website on the federal level, and we're not going to get involved with that. And it comes down to an issue of subsidy. Sam, thank you for joining us. Would you explain how this issue could indeed bring a fall to Obamacare?
Well, when Congress enacted the law, it knew it could not constitutionally order the states to set up their own exchanges. And so it decided instead to sort of bribe them by offering them subsidies if they did establish those websites. Those subsidies would reduce the premiums that the people buying Obamacare would have to pay. But those subsidies did come with some very large penalties for employers. And so a number of states decided they would not, in fact, participate. This caught Congress by surprise because they figured no state is going to turn down this money, and they figured wrong. As of now, we've got about 34 states. And so that, of course, is the prime issue now that the Supreme Court has taken up, namely whether those states that have decided not to participate, that we call the refusenik states, whether they can in fact receive subsidies. Then the IRS about 2 years ago decided we're going to make it subsidies for everyone. Now, the reason this is in one sense extremely important to the functioning of Obamacare is because overall there are three major elements to the program. One is the individual mandate. Namely, everyone has got to be insured. Secondly, is something known as community rating, which is that the insurance companies essentially have to insure anyone who comes along. And third are these subsidies. If the court rules that the subsidies can only go to the states that actually did set up their own exchanges, then you'd currently have a majority of states actually not receiving subsidies. Now, you might have battles in some of those states over whether to change their status or not, you know, to set up their own exchanges. But what you might end up with is a set up where a number of states are getting subsidies, others are not, which also means their companies within their borders are not getting hit by these penalties. And in one sense, it's going to be, you know, an interesting experiment just to compare how those different states fare in the
right
in the future.
So we have this case called King versus Burwell, which will be before or is before the Supreme Court. They are scheduled to rule on it by summer of next year. And if they decide that the rules of the Affordable Care Act specifically state that only states that set up their own health care exchanges qualify for the subsidies. And we've only got 16 states at this point that have set those things up and 34 states that have not. Then a lot of people in those 34 states that have not will not be able to pay for Obamacare, correct?
That's correct. At least they won't be able to pay at the low rates, which are, you know, the publicly posted rates, but in fact, the rates actually are higher. They're just being subsidized by taxpayer funds.
So, if that happens, and they cannot pay for it, all of a sudden the money that Obamacare needs to fund those people, especially those people that are at the bottom end, with expensive medical needs, it doesn't seem to work economically, correct?
That's one, I think, very likely possibility. Now, you know, it's, you know, some people talk about you're going to have a death spiral because the people in the refusenik states who are relatively young and healthy and who, in effect, would be subsidizing other folks and not as young and not as in as good health may simply stay out of the system entirely. I'm not sure that's the only scenario. And, of course, there are going to be huge disputes over what happens to folks who've already signed up. But basically, there's going to be a need for a fundamental reexamination of Obamacare at the federal level. The IRS regulation, which sort of opened the floodgates to these subsidies, really was done on the basis of, you know, this agency has an agenda, namely the White House has an agenda, and we're going to do everything in our power, our power being that of the IRS, to make sure it works. And so we're going to have subsidies for everyone. But this gets into a very, I think, fundamental issue of the rule of law, namely, it's the IRS's job to implement the law that Congress passed. It's not its job to rewrite the law. And in our view, that's exactly what the IRS has been attempting to do here.
So the IRS gets involved in all of this as well. And We've got an issue here where, depending upon how the Supreme Court decides, Obamacare—I would think Obamacare is teetering anyway, but is this, in your opinion, is this going to be the catalyst to bring down Obamacare, or is Obamacare ever going to be brought down, or is, you know, will a new Republican Congress, piece by piece, bring it down? What do you think, Sam?
You know, obviously it's hard to predict. I think at a minimum there's going to be some fundamental reexamination going on at the federal level. Now, whether that means you're going to have some overhauls being made by Congress, you know, I think it's somewhat more likely in the wake of the recent election. And now you're going to have a Supreme Court ruling that's spurring it even more. But I think you're also going to get some interesting debates within various states as to whether they should maintain their status or change it. And then, you know, this is all happening against the backdrop of this MIT professor, Jonathan Gruber, who since July, when the first appellate court rulings were issued, there's been one after another of these newly discovered videos surfacing. He was one of the major architects of Obamacare, and so for the last 1 to 2 years, as our court cases have been going through the judicial process, he's been one of the main critics of our position, claiming, oh, everybody always knew the subsidies were intended for everyone, and our position is crazy. And then 2 days after the court rulings come down, we discover this video by him taken in 2012, where he expressly states that states that don't set up their own exchanges will be losing billions of dollars. So in a sense, his claim of our position being crazy is exactly the same position that he himself had taken back then before this became such a hot issue.
Yes, he's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that ties directly into the court case in a number of ways.
Sure.
But now these more recent videos where he's talking about how we were able to sort of disguise the real tax implications of Obamacare, and, you know, with the help of the stupidity of the American public, we got it enacted. This forms, I think this has really been stimulating public opposition to Obamacare, which has always been substantial, and I believe now has risen to some relatively high levels.
Yes.
So I can't say that's going to influence the court, but I think everything takes place in this whole context of a public debate.
Yes, Gruber is the gift that keeps on giving for those that don't like Obamacare. And it's funny, if you look at the strict language of the subsidies part of the Affordable Care Act, it's pretty clear, isn't it, that only the states that opt in with websites and involvement would get the subsidies. Now, they're saying, are they not, that the real intent was to allow all states to get subsidies? Isn't that going to be, or is that their argument?
That's one major argument. They're also claiming it's a typo. Well, it's not a typo. It's a clause that appears, and it appears not just once. It appears about 7 to 9 times, depending on how you count. So, arguing that, you know, we should disregard that provision because of this overriding intent ignores several things. First of all, this was one huge statute passed in under some very chaotic circumstances, and if there was one overriding intent, it was to get the statute, the law enacted. And so in order to get it enacted, a number of political compromises were made, and I believe one of those was giving states the right to opt out. And so to argue now that we've got that judges have to pull some overriding intent from this huge swamp of a statute, and on the basis of that overriding intent, sweep aside contrary provisions, I think is crazy. What courts really have to do is focus on the provisions that are before them. They cannot do some sort of a long distance or going back 4 years in time, psychoanalysis of what Congress intended, because there was lots of dispute over that. And so, you know, this has happened before in issues of statutory interpretation, and the courts, I think, very properly say, look, if you've got a badly drafted statute, that's the sort of mess that Congress has to correct, because we, the court, cannot rewrite the legislation. But we, the court, can focus on the specific provisions that are being litigated, and based on that, I don't see any other way to come out. You know, it's noteworthy that in the Richmond case, where we lost at the Court of Appeals, even those three judges, in ruling against us, still said that in terms of the text of the statute, the language, we have the more appealing argument. So, you know, when you've got that sort of characterization coming from a court that rules against you, I think you know you have a pretty strong argument.
You would seem so. We're talking with Sam Kasman, who has graciously given some of his time to us this morning. He is the general counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and CEI has come out with an article recently about the Obamacare subsidies, Beyond Gruber, How HHS Flip-Flopped on Federal Exchange Subsidies. Sam, John Roberts, to the, I guess, everlasting sorrow of conservatives, was the tipping point that allowed Obamacare to pass, claiming that indeed it was a tax and therefore could be instituted. Do you think that now that this is coming back to them on this particular issue of the subsidies, that John Roberts may find this as an opportunity to redeem himself among conservatives?
Well, you know, I can't get into questions of whether any justice is going to be looking for personal redemption or anything whatsoever here. I've always thought that no matter what you think of Obamacare, there's a basic rule of law issue here that really transcends, the political and policy leanings, namely, you do not want agencies cut loose from the things that Congress enacts. The Constitution draws a very clear distinction between the legislative power, the power to draw up and enact laws, and that belongs to Congress, and the executive power, which is to carry out those laws and implement them. And the last thing in the world you want, especially when you've got a sort of activist, agenda-driven administration is for agencies to think the sky's the limit in terms of implementing that legislation. It's clear, for example, that in the initial years after Obamacare's enactment, the IRS was leaning towards the position that no subsidies are only available to the states that set up their own exchanges. And from Scott Vorce's paper that you just mentioned about the HHS's flip-flop, if you look at that agency's contracts and grants to develop its own healthcare.gov website and for the states to develop their own websites, HHS thought the exact same thing. They were not planning to put what's called a tax credit calculator into the federal website because they thought any state utilizing that would not be eligible for subsidies. And then they go and change their mind sort of in lockstep with the IRS. So, you know, I think as the as it became clear that states were not choosing to participate, these agencies decided something has got to be done to change that.
Wow. Well, it's a real mess and a very interesting one. Sam Kessman, thank you very much for joining us this morning to talk a little bit about it from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and I know we'll be talking down the road.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Sam Kessman. All right, let's take our break. We got lots more to talk about, including we're going to tell you where the 10 lowest income metro areas exist in the country. You may find that a bit of a surprise. We'll be back.
And it shows them pearly white, just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, my name's Pat Maxson. I buy houses. I want to bring to your attention my new radio show on Tan Talk. Starts this December 3rd, drive time 5 to 6. If you're interested in flipping houses, wholesaling, rehabbing, rentals, and many other topics related to real estate, then call me at 813-419-1713. 813-419-1713. The good news is I may just buy your house, any situation, so listen December 3rd, drive time from 5 to 6 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Internationally recognized king of murals, the one who has been featured in multiple street festivals, Florence, Italy's Leonardo da Vinci Travel Tour Museum for 5 months, Jordy, the artist, is visiting St. Pete, Clearwater, Tampa to transform your home, office, or room with an artistic creativity formation and murals. Call Jordy, the artist, at 407-310-8589.
Jordy, the artist, now has his own show Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. With an invitation to all vacationing Canadians throughout Central Florida to join me here on Tan Talk for Canada Calling. A daily update of news from home each day, Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. and 12 noon. That's Canada Calling, a 61-year listening tradition, coast to coast in Florida. Tell your friends and neighbors to join us each day, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. and 12 noon for Canada Calling, here on the 10 Talk Network.
Grillsmith in Clearwater reminds listeners, support your community by frequenting your locally owned businesses. Small business employs over half the workforce. Remember your local merchant before shopping online or out of town and help support the economy business by business. This community reminder from Grillsmith in Clearwater. Whether you're hungry as a bear or barely hungry, stop by at 2539 Countryside Boulevard. For catering needs, call 726-6061.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We're back on Freedom Works. Thank you again for joining us. Kind of an interesting discussion with Sam Kessman about whether or not these subsidies that the government would give to people that register for Obamacare through a state website, whether they're going to be available to those that register through a federal website. Well, here in Florida, there is no state website. So those that have registered for Obamacare on the federal website in Florida may have their subsidies in jeopardy, depending upon the ruling by the Supreme Court. By the way, out of the Tampa Bay Times this morning regarding Floridians and Obamacare, the price of standard health plans in Obamacare insurance marketplaces in Florida are going to be increasing next year by double digits in Tampa Bay. Double digits. It says here in the article, however, 90% of Floridians who bought insurance on the exchanges received subsidies. And it says those subsidies could also go up. Well, the problem is those subsidies could also blow up when the Supreme Court says, no, no, no. You people in Florida and all those other states that didn't get your own exchanges, you're out of luck. You don't get a subsidy for your health care cost. So that's going to be a very, very interesting and important issue. Meantime, there are lots of other problems going on. Lois Lerner's emails, all those emails, apparently, well, as many as 30,000 of them have been found. She was at the center of this targeting of conservatives by the IRS. She has stepped down, of course. But remember when they were claiming that there was all those emails that have been lost? Well, apparently, federal watchdogs have uncovered about 30,000 of those lost emails. And I guess Republicans will be sifting through them to find out and confirm their suspicions that Lois Lerner indeed was involved in a conspiracy against conservative organizations and their existence. Lerner led the IRS division that targeted the Tea Party and other conservative groups. They did an excessive amount of scrutiny on them, slowing down their ability to operate, demanding all kinds of audit information. It was pretty clear. And some of these emails may show whether or not there was a little bit of a conspiracy going on to hurt conservatives. Also, there's a report that's now come out, a House report, where the majority of the people in the report were Republicans, on Benghazi, saying that there was no intelligence lapses in the Benghazi effort. I find that rather interesting, with the Republicans dominating that report. And Lindsey Graham from Carolina, a Republican, finds it the same way. He got on those Sunday talk shows blasting this GOP House report. He said they did a lousy job. He said, quote, I think the report is full of crap. He went on CNN's program State of the Union yesterday to say that. Now, this is the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and they released their report Friday. They said that the CIA and the military acted properly in responding to the attack on the Benghazi American compound in Libya. The report also found no wrongdoing by Obama officials, no delay in sending a rescue team. Well, there was no rescue team that was really sent. I don't know about that. No missed opportunity for a military rescue, really. And no evidence the CIA was covertly shipping arms from Libya to Syria. Now, Lindsey Graham doesn't like this report. He says this report puts all the blame on the State Department and absolves the intelligence community. We know one thing, that they lied. They, the State Department, lied about the cause of the attack on Benghazi when they claimed it was a video that enraged Muslims. It certainly was not. It was a planned attack. Now, one other problem still going on that we've been hearing about recently is the executive order by Barack Obama on Friday to tamp down on turning back illegal immigrants that are pouring into the country. Now, Democrats and Republicans on these talk shows Sunday We're going back and forth over whether Obama has violated the Constitution, that his executive order is really a legislative order, which means that he cannot legislate from the White House. He doesn't have that power. It's a separation of power. And I said he did this Friday. He actually did it Thursday. He announced Thursday he was going to suspend the deportation for about 5 million illegals. And so back and forth, these Democrats and Republicans are on the air talking about this. It's going to go to the courts, and I think the courts are clearly going to say he doesn't have the power to tell the border guards, hey, stand down, let these people come through. I don't think that he can get away with that, but you never know in this day and age. Ted Cruz, Republican congressman from Texas, this is a stunning and sad display by the president. He says we need to impose real consequence. The governor-elect of Texas, by the way, Greg Abbott, a Republican, was on the same show as Cruz, and he was saying the same thing. He says, we think we have standing better than any other state in Texas to be able to assert this claim of abdication by the president. We have a president, he says, who feels completely unrestrained by the Constitution. And I think he's right. There is, so the Supreme Court's going to be involved in a lot of things coming up here. One other thing that they are going to be talking about, I find this one to be really interesting. You know how Facebook, and you can go on there, and people are using it as a free speech place. There have been a lot of harmful things that have been said, unkind things, and that's just the nature of people that get going on these things. But apparently, there was a guy that threatened his ex-wife on Facebook. Basically, he had been issued an injunction to stay away from his ex-wife. So he goes on Facebook and he says, fold up your what amounts to the paper that keeps me away from you and put it in your pocket. Is it thick enough to stop a bullet? So that's a scary way of informing your ex-wife that he's not going to pay any attention to staying away and the order to stay away. But is that something that he can be sent to jail for? Can he go on Facebook and say that and claim that it's a free speech issue? You know, there are certain things you cannot say. For instance, we all have supposedly free speech, but you can't go into a crowded theater and scream fire. You will be prosecuted if you do. So, the issue is whether this guy should be prosecuted for what he now claims was just blowing off steam. Of course he's going to say that, right? Oh, I'm just blowing off steam. I wouldn't really do that. And is it what he said, was it his intent or was it his idea just to scare her? So this is going to be a case that the Supreme Court is going to take up. Can he be prosecuted? Can he be taken to court for doing this? Both sides are asking the Supreme Court to consider this issue and to consider the unique qualities of the internet and social media, Facebook, Twitter, and all of the others. How much free speech do we have, right? What can you say on there when you completely have freedom, you know? Because these websites basically let you just do your own thing, right? Should the government become involved? I don't think they should. I think between the two, having a government watch what we say for fear of doing and saying something that could hurt somebody else or not watching, I prefer the latter. Anyway, let's do this. We'll take our break, getting closer to our top 10, which again, the top 10 lowest income areas in the country in big cities. So we'll be right back.
And it shows them pearly white.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
arg, matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday jazz brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717. You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Just got laid off or quit your job? Or maybe you're employed but looking to change directions and start a new career. Before you run headlong into a new job search, join me, Carl Schumacher, on Ask the Career Coach at 12:30 Thursdays on WTAN Radio for tips and discussions that can help you to recruit yourself into your next job. Or catch me online at www.executive-careercoaching.com.
Hey, Goose Monkey, show me what you got.
Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., it's Grease Monkey Radio.
This is Tim Gibson, the host of the Grease Monkey Show, owner of Tim's Performance Service Center and RTG Auto Sales in Tarpon Springs, Florida. I encourage you to call in and ask questions, be advised of what may be wrong with your vehicle, or trying to find the answer that you haven't found yet.
And during the week, you can call the shop at 727-543-1601.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you again for joining us. Kind of an overcast day in Tampa Bay, though warming up. Gosh, the weather has been wild so far in November, has it not? We've broken all kinds of snow records up north. Chris, you're from Massachusetts. You get a lot of snow up in Boston area, I'll bet. They must be getting a ton of it up there. I don't know if it's still on the ground or not.
I don't know that they've gotten as much as we think. I think a lot of the parts of the Northeast are focused on Buffalo.
It's mainly
and
Buffalo.
Upstate New York.
Yeah.
I know there's some, but in comparison, I don't.
Not so bad.
Buffalo got, what, 6 feet?
Six
to
seven.
In the course of a week or something?
6 to 7. It's starting to warm up. Now you got the flooding problem.
Right, exactly.
But it's amazing. I bring that up, actually, because, you know, you always hear about all these scientists talking about global warming and that a lot of the people on the, I guess, on the pro-global warming side now say, oh, there's no more argument to be made. It is global warming. It's a matter of fact. So we're going to get past that. Well, there's some people that don't want to get past it. And a new report out of Purdue University, it's a report and a survey of global warming, finds that only half of scientists blame humans if for any kind of global warming. Not this NASA-endorsed claim of 97%. You know? You've heard that. Oh, 90% of the scientists are saying man is involved in global warming. Apparently not.
What are they saying it is?
Well, they say in a survey of nearly 7,000 people, scientists in the agricultural field, they found most scientists there agree that climate change is happening. Only 50.5% blame mankind. More than 90% of the scientists and climatologists surveyed said they believe that climate change was occurring. More than 90% believe it is occurring, with more than 50% attributing climate change primarily to human activities. But that's just a little bit over 50%, according to the Purdue report, not 90%. So I guess most scientists still think that humans are, you know, are involved in it.
Are they saying that the other 50% or 49.5% is just natural, you know, stuff, occurrences?
It's well, I mean, what I'm saying is that half of the scientists believe
that it's
man is involved in creating a warming of our planet.
Right.
A little under half think that man has anything to do with it.
But they don't go further and say what it is that they
I see what you mean.
Right? Now.
Well, you know,
that would be interesting. Because if only 50% are saying it's man, then what?
Well, here's my take on it. And I'm not a scientist. I'm just one opinion. It seems to me that there's always up and downs on warming and cooling on this planet. We might be overall in a warming pattern, but you know, it's not warming, for instance, in the eastern half of our country. It hasn't been. It's been cooler. No. So it depends on, you know, it's not like the whole planet is warming up together. Maybe up here it's warmer, but over here it's colder.
If anything, I think we're cooling down.
So what's
together.
Going on here? I don't see. And I also, they can't predict weather 2 weeks out yet. Well, they can predict weather about 3 days out.
Farmers aren't Farmer's Almanac.
Yes, that's true. And that goes back to what? 1800s?
I don't know. You would have a better guess than me. I remember seeing that when I was a kid. My parents used to show it to me.
It's been around since the, since the 1800s.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah. The Farmer's Almanac? Oh, yes.
Oh, see,
yes. So they, I don't know what they rely on, but...
The Mayan calendar? I don't know.
It could be. I don't know what they rely on. But you know what? I think they're just as accurate as anybody else. And a lot of people think it is accurate. But my point is that if they can't figure out weather in 2 weeks, how are they going to extend it and say, we know that global warming is now here? You're going through some period of time, maybe, for a while. And I can tell you that there is nobody in the United States east of the Continental Divide right now that thinks too much of global warming, because they're all getting, they've had a horrible November. It's been very cold. Anyway, that's where it goes. And now, got a couple of minutes, and I want to get to this story. I am a graduate of Marquette University, and I read this story about a student there that I feel a little uncomfortable with. It has to do with gay marriage. And at Marquette, an instructor has told his or her class, in this case, that students who oppose gay marriage are homophobic and perhaps should not be in her class anymore. Now, this is a Catholic university. No matter how you feel about gay marriage, it's a Catholic university and a Catholic Jesuit university. And Catholic doctrine, at least at this point, is not, it doesn't agree with gay marriage. So for a person to say that in a Catholic university,
employed
to their student,
by that, yeah.
Now, this is a 20-year-old student who's at the center of this. What he did was he taped the conversation. He must have had it in his briefcase, and he walked up and he started chatting with the teacher. So he did kind of sneak this out of her. But the story was first reported on a blog run by a Marquette professor. And the young man said he was in an ethics class with his female instructor. And in the theory of ethics, he said, we had a discussion on everything except gay rights. She erased that particular ethic from the chalkboard after having originally put it up. And so, after class, he went up to the teacher and he told her that they should have kept that issue of gay marriage and gay rights in the discussion in their class. And he says to her, quote, are you saying if I don't agree with gays not being allowed to get married that I'm homophobic? She says, quote, I'm saying it would come off as homophobic. And at some point she says that if he's not comfortable with them not discussing that issue, then he had a right to leave the class. Anyway, I think they should discuss it. That's my point. Anyway, it is time for our top 10 lowest income metro areas in the country. And here we go. Are we ready? Drum is set? Okay. This, by the way, is for cities with and metro areas with 500,000 or more people. Number 10. It's Miami. Oh, no, excuse me. I misread it. It's Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Okay, the median household income there is $43,000. That includes the income of everybody in the house, okay? Everybody in the house. They are the 10th lowest income. Number 9. This is Miami and Miami Beach. The median income there for the family is $42,000. Wow. Ah, not much. Number 8. To the opposite side of the country, Los Angeles and Long Beach and Glendale, that metro area where the median household income is only $41,000. It's actually, it's about $500 less than Miami at $41,800. LA is at $41,300. Number 7, Springfield, Massachusetts. Is that close to where you lived?
That's where I was born.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's. I'm sure Springfield's a big blue-collar town, but their median household income ranks at $41,049, and they're the 7th lowest income metro area in the country.
Bay State Hospital in Springfield, Mass. Is where I was born.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Glad I moved down here. Or maybe I'm not. We haven't got to the top of the list.
Exactly. Okay, number 6. Would you believe Honolulu, Hawaii? The median income in Honolulu and Waikiki Beach and all that good stuff is only $40,700. I guess you can go and enjoy traveling there, but maybe it's tough to live there. Number 5. El Paso, Texas. Yes, indeed. El Paso is the 5th lowest income area. I'm not surprised about that necessarily, but their median household income is $36,100. Number 4, back to California, Fresno, California. That's up further north from LA. The median household income in Fresno is $38,000. Actually, that's more than El Paso. I wonder if we screwed that one up. Anyway, they're in the top 10, and it's at 38,000. Number 3, we're back on track here, Modesto, California. Modesto's median household income is $35,600. Number 2, would you believe New York and White Plains and Wayne? All of those areas are in the metro area there. They are the 2nd lowest income metro area at $35,370. And the number 1 lowest income metro area is do you know where McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission, all those areas are in Texas by any chance, Chris?
Not a clue. No, I have no idea.
I have no idea. They are the lowest. They're at 34,931. Now, having said that, if we have about 30 seconds, Tampa, in the top 5 lowest income metro areas under websiteinternational.com, shows a median income of $45,880. So it actually technically could be included in the top 25. There you are.
There you go.
Freedom Works. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you Wednesday.
You know when that shark bite with its teeth big scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, where's old Maggie Heath?